Ready.
American 888 triad approach. Expect the ILS runway 5 right.
UPS 1269 heavy. Triad departure. Radar contact. Climb and maintain 10,000, 10,000.
Pipeline 364 Charlie Papa triad approach. Walk 0121.
FedEx 1048 heavy, 6 miles from Civvies. Turn left heading 080, maintain 3000 until established on the localizer. Cleared ILS, runway 5 left approach.
Skylab 75, clear visual approach, Coat Factory Airport.
November 89333, radar contact, 1-2 miles southeast of the Triad Airport. Stay altitude.
Skylab 75, report cancellation via farthest frequency in the air on the ground via the remote change to advisory approved.
Welcome to Opposing Bases Air Traffic Talk. We are Romeo Hotel
and Alpha Golf,
two air traffic controllers and rated pilots. This is an aviation podcast. We express our views and opinions about aviation, flying, and air traffic control. We do not represent our employer, and our show is for entertainment purposes only. We should not be used as a replacement for your CFI, your OJTI, the 7110.65, the FARs, your attorney, your doctor, your best friend, or your cat.
Monday, February 3rd, 2020, episode 110. On today's show, we're going to dig into the mountain of feedback about ADS-B, hear more of your audio comments and questions. What's up, Beiji?
Hello. Hello, everyone.
Happy Monday, really Monday morning after Super Bowl Sunday.
Yes.
The game was over early, and I was in bed early.
Yeah, it did. It didn't last as long as I thought it would. But it was a good game.
It was a good game. We were split down the house was split on who wanted to win. my old team is the 49ers. I don't keep up with it anymore.
Right.
I grew up on watching them in the 80s, so when they were amazing. But they lost. Good for the Chiefs. Good for you.
Yeah, we just arbitrarily split it in the household.
Oh.
Because we didn't really care. So we just picked teams. Two of us took that one and two of us took the other one.
Mm. Which one did you have?
The 49ers.
Oh, so we both lost.
Yeah. Well, I'm from the school of thought where you want the team that beat you to win the whole thing. That some people have, you know, sort of a vengeful
opposite approach
policy on that, but we always felt like, hey, if we got knocked out by the team that wins the whole thing, it makes us look better. I mean, the only team that, you know, that beat us was the best team. So
mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you have a favorite commercial? I had two.
I didn't I really wasn't paying attention to commercials.
What?
No. I didn't sit and watch the game. I didn't sit down and watch the whole thing start to finish. I was doing other stuff.
There were a couple good car commercials. The Groundhog Day Jeep commercial was hilarious.
Oh, that I did see. And yes, we were laughing pretty good. The kids were like, what?
What is happening? The other one was all the people from Saturday Night Live and a few other shows on TV were on it. I think it was Hyundai. It had a car that could park itself. Smart
the
park.
Smart pack. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, anyway. We have a big show today.
Yes.
So before we get going on more ADS-B, I think I've had several people this week ask me about the Kobe Bryant accident. And we'll say something real quick about it. And then we'll move into the show.
Okay.
All right. First, our condolences to the families of those involved. The accident is highly publicized, and the media is trying to piece together a complicated investigation with headlines, and the public in general is looking for a quick answer. That is not possible without a proper investigation, and that takes time. So I'll say this. based on the air traffic side of it. By the sounds of the publicized audio, we don't have it all. The controllers that worked the aircraft did an outstanding job providing services in complicated airspace and challenging weather. I am sorry you have to hear those transmissions played over and over on the news and on YouTube. I've been there. It sucks. All the controllers I heard exemplified professionalism and attention to the rules outlined in the 7110. I would encourage all of them, all of the controllers, to utilize the resources made available by our union to help air traffic controllers effectively manage the stress which may be experienced following a critical incident. I wish I had taken advantage of that program when I was processing an accident several years ago. The resource is there, and I encourage all of you to use it. AG?
Yeah, so we obviously don't have the whole picture on this thing. And we're waiting for the NTSB and the findings to come out. And so I'm not going to speculate or Monday morning quarterback, you know, something that we don't fully understand. But I can say this, based on my time flying helicopters for the Army, and that was that weather played a significant role in flight planning and risk mitigation during my stint. So weather has always been one of the top issues with the Army and one of the top contributors to fatal accidents for Army helicopter pilots. These incidents typically involved flights with low ceilings and low visibility, and the crew then inadvertently going IMC. So you didn't intend to, and all of a sudden, you pop into the clouds. It seems like, and I don't know, maybe as you know, maybe the fixed wing community that doesn't seem like a very likely scenario for an airplane to be scud running, you know, real low and then just sort of pop into the clouds. But usually it sort of creeps up on you a little bit more subtly. The visibility starts reducing and reducing, and you do have contact. And then pretty soon you shift your vision one way, you shift it the other way. And then at some point in there, you lost sight of the ground, and now you're not seeing anything. So in the Army, we treated this moment, once you realize that, as an emergency, which of course it is, but we had a set of defined steps and procedures once this happened, to include what altitude are we climbing to, what airspeed are we going to climb at, are we going to turn, do we know what are the biggest obstacles that we know about that we need to turn for, otherwise we're just going to level the wings and start a climb, typically max rate of climb. You're going to squawk emergency, you're going to start looking for the approach frequency if you're not already talking to those folks. We briefed before every flight, what the inadvertent IMC plan was. Where are we going to recover to? What's the minimum safe altitude for the route? Overseas, we went down route segment by segment. So this first, let's say, quarter of the route, and then the second half of the route, and then the last third, maybe, you know, depending on how the terrain and everything changed, what is the plan at this point? And it was a piece of paper that got printed for every single mission, the procedures. So all that is just to demonstrate the importance that the Army took on that event. And I'm not saying that the Kobe Bryant crash was a result of that. We just don't know that yet. But based on what, you know, the weather looked like and everything, that certainly could have been a possibility. And we tried to always be very careful with the weather, and we occasionally did find ourselves in situations that were less than desirable. And I always tried to be very conservative with that, because making that transition from visually flying to instrument flying, and you're typically low to the ground and slow already, is a very dangerous transition to make. And the Army always told us you had about 45 seconds, maybe less, based on accident investigation analysis that we conducted. I think it was typically less than that, maybe 30 seconds. If you didn't have it together and have your plan going by then, you were not going to make it. So it was something we took very seriously. And you know, I'm not saying that the civilian world does it differently, because I don't even know. If some of you civilian helo guys, let us know how it's treated there, especially the EMT, you know, the medevac pilots. So anyway, that's just, I don't know. I just wanted to convey to some people, because I know we have mostly a lot of fixed wing guys, that this isn't as big of a deal to them, and especially the IFR rated guys. But for the helicopter world, this is a big concern, and it's always a concern, because it's easy in a helicopter to get lower and slower and lower and slower as the weather starts to deteriorate. And that's typically when you would get in trouble. So, but our condolences to all the families that experienced loss in this accident. Our thoughts and our prayers are out there with you.
Yeah, I think this last week has been frustrating watching that. You know, the media typically butchers aviation stories. I feel like they're making an extra effort to try to piece together some of the proper terms and IMC, special VFR. But you're getting deep into the weeds on some complicated issues that, you know, a lot of pilots don't fully grasp and have to exercise those different rules. So we have to give it time. We're not going to have all, we'll probably will never get all the answers, but we got to give it time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, for the media to talk about it, you know, like the NTSB will talk about it, you're not going to sit the American public down and have a 2-day class about,
right,
you know, weather and aviation and cloud clearance, you know, requirements and airspace rules. And it's just not digestible to the general population. And all of us in aviation know that. That's what we expect from the media. You know, it's never going to be the full, it's never going to be the full story. Have you ever, especially something that you've been involved in, you know, indirectly or directly, has it ever been right?
No.
It's never right.
Mm-mm.
So whatever comes out in the media, take it with a grain of salt. Sometimes you got to try to read between the lines and understand that what's coming out is it's trying to be consumable by the general population of non-aviation people. So anyway, that's all I have.
Thank you, sir. All right, we'll move on into a more positive topic.
Okay.
All right.
Ready.
Since OB-109, we have 3 new patrons. We have 2 in the show listener tier. And we have Alpha Mike and Kilo Whiskey. And we have 1 new patron in the show supporter tier, Charlie Bravo. I think that just came in a couple days ago. And we got a giant PayPal contribution from Kilo Juliet. Thank you, everyone, and welcome to the Opposing Bases Patreon site. Thank you for your support. We are going to play a little bit of audio from the Kilo Juliet.
What's up, AG and RH? Thanks for all the wonderful shows. It's Kilo Juliet from the Toronto area, and I think I was responsible for episode number 5, VFR Lives Matter. When I first started listening, I was a new pilot with less than 100 hours, and I just purchased my own plane, a Lake Buccaneer, which is basically a boat with wings that you row through the sky. Currently, at 360 hours, you guys have absolutely changed how I fly. Before Opposing Bases, I never thought about an arrival or departure side, and when you're flying around tall, skinny Needle North Airport, that can create problems. Before Opposing Bases, if the control zone ended at 3,000 feet, why not top it at 3,100? I was the VFR pilot, flying a float plane, low and slow, and not talking to anybody. Now I consider traffic and flow at the airports I'm passing, and even pick up flight following when I'm high enough to play in the big pool. The number one thing that I've learned from you guys is that in the radar room, they do not see the same resolution that we see on apps like 4Flight. And if we rubber band our way around, following the magenta line, we are best to give a half-mile buffer around the places we're not supposed to be. Listening to the episodes on ADS-B, it struck me that pilots with ADS-B in, although they can see other planes, they don't have the big picture in the plan, as you pointed out. And that must be exactly what it feels like to be a controller who can see VFR planes squawking 1200, but have no idea what their plans are and what they're going to do next. The number one thing I wish my instructor had done with me was cross-border operations flying to the US. That was something I found incredibly intimidating and really easy once I actually did it. Mm-hmm. Keep up the great work. Kilo Juliet's got 1200 in the box. I'm heading back down below radar coverage. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Kilo Juliet, and all of our new patrons. If you'd like to learn more about supporting the show, check out opposingbases.com/support. Timely feedback.
Timely feedback.
We have mostly ADS-B audio. This is an audio-heavy episode.
Okay.
That being said, I'll take one for the team and do number one.
How noble of you.
All right, number one from an unnamed Metroplex controller to our southwest. They say, first of all, I think it was OB-107. You had a pilot ask about automation and coordination. At Metroplex, we have two other forms of coordination. First is from Racetrack Airport, I think you call the NASCAR field. They have a tower, and to request a release, it flashes on our screen, and we can hit a number to release them so we don't have to talk on the landline. Let's pause right there. I might be the only one. There might be a couple of us in the building that utilize that on the mid when the 1 a.m. body is downstairs. Do you use that?
Yes. So Juliet Mike uses that. He'll be in upstairs and I'm downstairs. Mm-hmm. And he uses it all the time. And just about each time I have to go, how do I use that again?
It's a way to passively coordinate. So the blinking won't stop until the controller on the approving side says approved, and they just type in a couple buttons. We have to reteach that to ourselves every time.
Yes.
And when they do that, the approving controller presses F13 in the button, the 1 or the 2, presumably a 1, right?
Yeah.
It will stop blinking in the portion of the building, usually the tower, that is asking for approval. So that will be their indication that it's good to go. All right, they continue. The other is when we want to climb an aircraft that might hit another sector's airspace, we can put the requesting altitude in the scratch pad and flash him at the other position to approve, unable, or take radar on. All right, this gets complicated depending on the facilities, and I've heard various versions of this type of coordination. So we have a field in our scratch pad that we can put a requesting altitude, not like the center where they have that fourth line. We don't have that normally, so you'd have to type it in manually, and you can flash that as a handoff, and they see that, and they can either approve it or deny it, or they can take radar on them. So if they don't take it, I don't know what the implied consent is on this one. But if the receiving controller takes it, they want to talk to them, and they'll do the vertical stopping. And usually this is with airspace that's divided with, vertically. So maybe the departure controller only owns up to 8,000, for example, at the satellite sector, and they want to fly through the departure sector's airspace that's 9 up to 16. They'll flash them, and if they take it, that means they got to stop them, and they'll work them. If they flash it onto center, that means it's point out approved.
Right.
Yeah. All right.
So, yeah. So they have taken that and made it an official means of coordination. We have it. It is not incorporated into an SOP or anything.
Right.
And people do try to use it.
Right.
And I get very grumpy and I tell them to turn that garbage off. I don't want to see it.
Yes. It's a good tool. We do need to memorialize it, though, for it to make any sense.
I agree. But as long as it's not, and there isn't some standard,
exactly.
I don't want to see it.
Right.
Very grumpy.
Agreed.
Okay.
They continue. OB 108, traffic calls with ADS-B. I love this story. When I have had merging targets with unidentified aircraft, I have pulled up ADS-B call signs so I can reach out and see if they might be listening to me. I would say 1 out of 10 is, but the few times they have been has been helpful. And I even had a pilot call and thank me because they were heads down looking at a map and didn't know they were headed at someone else. Love the podcast. Metroplex controller. Thank you. I like that story. I like how you have all this extra time to tag up unidentified ADS-B targets. That was a jab. I had to take it.
Right. I kind of like it.
So if we start typing anything in our scratch pad and then we get interrupted where we want to type, we don't have a second one to go to. We don't have a second place to be typing. So usually you're starting over by hitting the clear button. So let's just assume that there's always something ready to be put into a scratch pad. And if this situation presented itself, you'd have to delete all of that to go do anything with that unidentified airplane. So,
right. Ugh. And as a general rule of thumb, anytime you have something in the scratch pad and you hit clear, half of it will be deleted from your brain.
Yes.
And you won't know, you won't remember it.
And then you have to ask the pilot to say it again, and he's like, man, what is this person, dumb?
Yeah.
I literally just said it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
There's something big in there that is worth talking about for just a second. The airplane that she's talking about that may or may not be listening is an airplane that's not getting services from air traffic, and that just so happens to answer when they call their call sign. Now, maybe this will get easier for pilots to hear as time goes on after the ADS-B out requirement. But if somebody called my call sign and I was squawking VFR, I would instantly assume I was doing something wrong and would evaluate the situation before I even responded. Regardless if I wanted the information, it would just be out of fear. What did I do? Did you call and get flight following? I don't remember talking to this person.
Yeah, why are we...
What did we do? If we can't figure out that we are completely innocent, do not answer them. I'm kidding. I would never do anything wrong or illegal, so why would I feel guilty?
Right.
Wouldn't you feel like it was weird if they called you?
Yes.
Out of nowhere?
Yes. I would... We've said this before, but why are you listening and not just participating?
Very good. There we go. There's the big point. Yeah. If you're going to take the effort or make the effort to listen, find the frequency, follow along on the map that wherever you're using that shows you what frequency you should be talking to for services, why not call up and get the services? Yeah.
Right.
Thank you. All right. Moving on.
Okay.
Number two.
Oh, from patron Charlie Mike.
Oh, we got some audio.
Hello, AG and RH. This is Charlie Mike from the frozen north. Just calling about landing at your own risk. At our airport, we have a ski strip and a float pond. And each year, those surfaces go through transitions as the seasons change, so that they have to be closed operationally by the airport. For example, the float pond goes every fall. The starts to freeze up, and the airport takes the buoys out of the float pond and notams the float pond closed for the winter. Well, there's always those few pilots coming in from someplace else with floats on that need a place to land, and the pond is not frozen over yet. It's just got some fringes, or it's about ready to. And so the ATC will clear the pilot to land at his own risk on the float pond. And the pilot can land, taxi off, and do whatever he needs to do. Similar with the ski strip, it first snow of the fall is freezing up, and the pilots need to they put their skis on already, and it's not quite solid yet, and the airport hasn't declared it open. The pilot can take off at his own risk from the ski strip to get off the airport or fly in on his skis to land on that ski strip. So it's used at your own risk for an otherwise operationally closed runway, but for nothing going on. Hope this helps. Charlie Mike.
Cool. I think we said ATC would never do that, but that's a really good example of why they would do that.
Yeah. Interesting.
Very. So the
he said surface, in the fall. He said in the fall things started to freeze. That was the worst part that I that was the worst thing I heard in that whole Whew. That's chilly.
Yeah. Is that also when it's not sunny but for maybe an hour or two a day? I don't know when that starts up there.
Yeah, I don't. Ooh, man.
Thank you. That was good audio. And thank you for finding a scenario that air traffic would clear you to land on a closed surface. So presumably there's no floating X's out there.
Right.
All right. Very good. Thank you. All right. Number three from patron Captain Nick. We haven't heard from you in a while. Here we go.
Hi there, RH and AG. It's Charlie Alpha Papa Tango Alpha India November November India Charlie Kilo here. Just a thought to bear in mind when discussing ADS-B or TCAS, come to that. One has to be very careful to ensure that the traffic shown and the one you can see are one and the same thing. The trap is that you believe that you have separation on the traffic you can see, but it turns out that isn't the threat. This particularly applies when deciding not to react to a resolution advisory, not a wise decision, or just maneuvering because of traffic you can see on your ADS display. As you so eloquently put it, traffic monitoring systems don't give the pilot the whole picture. Mind you, same applies when responding to traffic calls from ATC, but should there be any possibility of confusion between two aircraft in a similar area, I would assume that a controller would give some clue when asking a pilot to report traffic in sight. My personal rule was never to call traffic unless I was absolutely certain, and even then I'd keep a good eye out in case I'd made a mistake. Moving on to letting any Tom, Dick or Harry talk on the radio. I realise that in a land where folk wander around in hats that can hold 45 litres of liquid, wear six-shooters and drink whiskey shots in bars with swing doors, it may be perfectly acceptable to let an unqualified passenger use the radio. In more civilised countries, it's a requirement for any user of a radio to have a licence. In the UK, one must be at least 16 years old and have passed the PPL communication theoretical exam. This must be completed before the practical exam. A 24-month validity period begins once you've passed the written exam. Passed a practical RTF communication test with a 24-month validity period. Demonstrated language proficiency to at least level 4. I'm going to do an RH now and quote from the Air Navigation Order, Article 26, which, without going into the whole paragraph, I could if you'd like me to, it states that a license is required unless one is a student pilot on a flight authorized by a flight instructor or in a glider, not talking to ATC. I'm sure there are some other occasions. I'd be surprised if it's a lot different in the US. Don't get me wrong, I wasn't always one for sticking to these kind of rules, and I do remember in the days when we were allowed flight deck visitors having Tony Curtis on the jump seat for a while. You know, the chap, I think he's passed away now, but famous for "I'm Spartacus, no, I'm Spartacus," amongst other things. And he engaged in a lovely conversation with a Canadian air traffic controller for a good 10 minutes on a nice quiet frequency when we were up in the wilds of northern Canada. So, yeah, it was a rule that I didn't necessarily always obey, but one that exists nevertheless. Brilliant. Welcome to the world of 50%. Loving the show as always. Keep up the good work and many thanks. Cheers.
Thank you, Captain Nick. The music in the background is a subtle something and I don't know it yet. Do you get it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it definitely fits into the theme of 45 liter. I'm not sure what that means, but 10 gallon. Typically, we measure our hats in gallons.
Oh, okay.
On this side of the ocean. So, you know, a big cowboy hat, a six shooter, and swinging door saloons.
I do have to say, I thought of this after the fact. When I went to the airline, I had to get a FCC operator permit, operator or something. I think they called it a permit. But it wasn't any test. There was no validation period. You just filled out a piece of paper and sent it in, and they sent you this really archaic-looking laminated operator certificate for the radio. But we did not do that in training, and maybe we are under some rule like theirs. Student pilots using the radio. I don't know.
Maybe. But it's the Wild West here, so...
What's that?
It's the Wild West here, so we just kind of... We do whatever we want.
I want to emphasize the point he was making about this traffic that you think you see versus the one that is the threat. That is a, there are different possibilities there, but you think you have the one that's on your display in sight, but it may be another one. So it's important to know that the threat is the one you're actually seeing.
Yes. I think that is a very important point from a veteran aviator.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly because it affirms our stance on on this whole ADS-B and TCAS, you know, traffic situation.
Agreed. Very good.
But, yeah. Thank you, Captain Nick.
Thank you. I forgot to comment on that first audio we heard from the Kilo Juliet. About the things that he's noticed about a departure side and arrival side and hanging out 100 feet above the airspace. That's worth talking about, too. If we're getting that point across, I feel like we're doing our job.
Yeah.
And that is, that made me feel good hearing that. So.
Yes. You know, I remember when we first started doing this, that was one of the things we talked about before we ever recorded a show that we wished pilots knew, you know, that had a general grasp on arrival, departure side. So, yeah, that's good.
You get number four.
Number four from patron Golf Echo.
I have a lot of audio. I want to hit the right button here. Here we go.
Hey, AG and RH, known as Silver and Rhodium to me. Golf Echo from the great state of Michigan here. Wanted to add to your discussion on OB-108 in the case of a VFR target squawking 1200, causing confusion by assuming that you can see his tail number instantly and calling with a traffic report. In December of last year, I was flying in a charitable event that delivers Christmas gifts to foster children throughout the state. Without going into great detail, the event hosts greater than 250 aircraft of every size and shape, delivering over 21,500 gifts. This all takes place during the daylight hours on one chosen day, so needless to say, that amount of additional air traffic is a burden on the controllers in this area. ATC does a remarkable job throughout, but the sheer volume of traffic is overwhelming. When I was checking in for my flight following on my climb out from my home airport, the controller keyed up and said, "I am completely saturated." I appreciate what ATC does for us, and I certainly wouldn't want to be the person sitting behind the scope on that day. A couple of points of interest regarding ADS-B. I had a very good pilot friend of mine sharing the workload from the right seat during the trip. He scanned for traffic, worked radios, and also monitored the ADS-B traffic display. As we neared the airport to pick up our load, following the special arrival procedure that was published, he was able to monitor the traffic flying to the inbound fix and to help me fit in even though we didn't immediately have them in sight. He helped me fall into line with them and slow my airspeed to match their displayed speed well before ATC had to manage it. This is a great help for me, and I'm sure really helped ATC as well. I'm not certain if ATC was aware that this was going on, but it is impressive how this technology can help. My second point, and I know you're going to put me in the penalty box for this one. After delivering our load, we launched for home from a Class D airport and did not pick up flight following. It was agreed that it would be nice to have a moment to visit after the busy legs that we flew earlier, although we were monitoring the center traffic for the area anyway. At one point, we noticed one ADS-B target opposite traffic, but with plenty of lateral spacing, so no issue. To our surprise, we heard the center call our tail number to see if we were on the frequency. I responded, and they asked if, as a favor, we could avoid turning right from our present heading so they wouldn't have to give the IFR traffic a turn. I responded that we could certainly do that, and they thanked us. While it was a bit surprising to hear your tail number called when you're just monitoring a frequency, this was certainly a win-win for everyone. And yes, I do normally make use of flight following, and I definitely appreciate what ATC does to keep us safe. I'll include a link to the flying event that I referenced in case you want to take a look at it. Keep up the great work. Thanks for all the great education that you give us pilots. Cheers.
There we go. There's the receiving side of that story on
cool
having air traffic reach out to you. Very good story.
Yeah.
You're not in the penalty box, but maybe next time get flight following, please.
Good feedback. I like that.
Yes. I will try to remember to put a link to that in the show notes. Sounds like a very busy event. One point I do want to make outside of the ADS-B comment, the use of a second person or pilot in a general aviation airplane is a great way to reduce some of the workload. So find a way to do it safely. If there's any knowledge of aviation in another seat, whether it's looking for traffic, that's just one easy thing to do. It's hard to find them, but it'll keep them busy. If they are able and legal to be on the radio, taking a radio call here and there when you're busy typing is another thing. And they can also help out with checklists. So there's a lot that other person can do without being a pilot necessarily.
Yes. I typically run down to the local saloon, find the person with the largest hat, and throw them in the seat. And off we go.
Oh. It would be fun to go flying with Captain Nick.
Yeah. You have to be careful about the spurs on their boots because that can punch right through the thin skin of your aircraft very easily.
Oh. Thank you, Golf Echo. He sent me a screenshot of some sort of lab-looking equipment with our initials on it. RH was pointed to a screen that said ready, and Alpha Golf's initials were underneath standby.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
I didn't see this. Where is this picture?
It is no longer in the inbox. I will forward it to your other email.
Okay. All right. All right. Unbelievable. I take a lot of hits. I tell you what.
All right. Is it my turn? I'm odds, yes.
Yeah.
Number 5. From Supreme Galactic Aviation Commander Patron Papa Charlie Lima. He left us some audio.
Hey, AG and RH. This is going to be a two-part feedback. Apparently, it's a little too long. Or otherwise, I should say, good morning, Robot Arg. Anyways, about your last giggly episodes where we were talking about ADS-B. My worry is about the complacency from using it when we're in our nice little fishbowl, our lakeside airport under the Metroplex Class Bravo. We're required to have it, but as soon as we leave, then what happens? If everyone's used to just staring at their fish finder and finding all of this ADS-B traffic, what happens in the other 90% of the NAS that doesn't require ADS-B and other transponders? Then all of a sudden, I'll be finding all the electrical or non-electrically equipped aircraft that don't have ADS-B and don't have the requirement, and all of a sudden, that airplane's going to hurt when they crunch into me just as much as an ADS-B-equipped airplane would. And having that complacency, I'm just worried that the folks aren't going to be looking outside. Just as you said in the last giggly episode, there's plenty of in the cockpit that's causing us to stay focused inside and not looking outside. So something to worry about there. And then also the initial bait and switch, and I'll talk about that in the next feedback. I'm running up on my 90 seconds. So the bait and switch was if we installed ADS-B early, we would get free traffic and weather, and then we had to be within so many feet and so many miles of other equipped aircraft if we weren't ADS-B equipped, and we could still get the free traffic and weather. Well, now that the mandate is here, do we all get the free traffic and weather? And the other thing is, are we really trying to increase safety by mandating all of this? We're all equipped because we're at the Lakeside Airport there under the Metroplex Class Bravo. But once we leave and once we're transmitting, do we get to see the same thing? And also the quality, of course, that's a whole nother debate about the weather that we're seeing on the ADS-B. Anyway, some other timely feedback for the other Giggly episodes. I think this was a couple of episodes ago. We were talking about listening to Guard on standby, and I've always been taught listen to Guard on standby because if there's a stuck mic on a really busy, say, center or departure frequency, you can easily switch over to Guard. And I've had controllers do that, and the airliners immediately just started picking up, and they were on it. And then also the frequency 12345, we call that Fingers at the Lakeside Airport. And this is Papa Charlie Lima signing off from the Race City Flight Operations at the Lakeside Airport under the Metroplex. AAG and RH, or as I should call the robot, ARG. Hopefully some of that other feedback came through, but just to sum everything up in one 90-second speak pipe message here. Essentially, the ADS-B is a great safety mandate. Initially, the bait and switch was for the weather and traffic that we would get if we installed early, and if that's increasing safety or not, who knows. But as you guys were debating, you do sound positive about ADS-B, and there are many positives about ADS-B, but just us aircraft owners, we're just worried about the cost. And especially when there's all the old aircraft that aren't mandated to have it, well, what about their cost to install an electrical system and have ADS-B? I've known many Piper Cubs that installed batteries just so that they can have an intercom within the airplane, and then also to have a radio so that they can transmit and talk to air traffic controllers or approach controllers in their area, and to have transponders around the Seattle area specifically. Anyways, great show as always, and it's Papa Charlie Lima signing off from the Race City Flight Operations by the Lakeside. I can't even remember. Under the Metroplex Bravo, anyways.
Thank you, Papa Charlie Lima, for putting together those bits of audio. The SpeakPipe button does have a 90-second limit for us to keep the cost down to zero on that one. So we used it three times. A couple good points in that one. I'll let you hit them first. What do you got?
Well, I mean, first of all, let's just get this out of the way. The Giggly episodes. I mean, I guess we are.
We do giggle some.
We do. Okay.
Yeah. I don't feel like the whole episode is like that.
I hope. Yeah. We'll have to be better about that, I guess. Anyway, a good point. So you're required to have it based on where you fly your airplane from.
Mm-hmm.
And you can definitely get into airspace where people are not required to have it, which does make a good point. And again, helps, you know, reinforce our point that you're still going to, you know, flight following is still a great resource and a tool to use to avoid other traffic that may or may not be participating in the ADS-B out program.
Right. I wonder if there's a little assumption that there'll be some, I don't want to say peer pressure, but let's say a year goes by and people that don't have it because they don't have to, they don't fly into that airspace, or their airplanes meet the requirements to not install the equipment, which is expensive and that should not be understated. They did spend significant money to put this piece of equipment in their airplane to comply with the mandate. That's a big part of this, and they want to see value for it. For the ones that didn't, are they going to feel like they are, I don't know which word to use. I don't want to disparage them. Are they going to feel like they should install it regardless of the fact that they're in airspace most of the time that doesn't need it? Will they feel that pressure?
I think there are going to be, you know, the pilots that did install it that feel like, hey, I spent the time and the money and the dents, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't. And now I'm, you know, I'm not able to see you out there. And so you're becoming a conflict, or I'm just trying to think of how it would be in their head. You know, it does seem like it wouldn't be fair.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, you know, it, because it doesn't, the system doesn't, it doesn't work unless everybody has it.
Right.
You're defeating the purpose.
And well, the ones that don't have it fly with a friend that does have it and say, wait a second, I really want to have this. I need to have this information. I need to be part of the big picture. Will that happen as well? Who knows? Well, time will tell.
Okay.
Thank you, Papa Charlie Lima. Very good. All right, yep. You get the evens. You get this one.
Number 6 from patron Hotel Bravo. Hi, AG and RH. I have been listening to the show for a few months now and have become one of your biggest fans. My RV4 is based at a Class Delta airport under the Big Crab Apple Bravo. Huh. I'm not sure what that is.
Neither am I.
Okay. I've had ADS-B in on a Stratus for a couple of years now, and I installed ADS-B out a few months ago. You guys really bummed me out in show 108. Huh. When you said ADS-B doesn't do much for you. I have numerous permanent wrench-shaped dents. Oh, that's where I got the dents from. Okay. Yeah. Wrench-shaped dents in my head. From stuffing myself upside down behind the back seat of my plane for hours on end to install it. But it all worked out fine. My wife likes the dents, and I'm kind of glad to be doing my part in the grand scheme of next gen. Wow. My hope is that it will be a plus once we all get used to it. I see the traffic on an iPad mini mounted on a RAM mount on the side of the cockpit. I've found the best use for it is when I'm flying cross country or in conjunction with clearing turns prior to doing some air work or aerobatics. Once I get into the busy airspace talking at ATC, I pretty much have to ignore it. As AG said, it's just too much information at that point. Thanks for making every Monday something to look forward to. Keep the shows coming, and hopefully I'll get down your way one of these days. Sincerely, Hotel Bravo. Cool. Yeah, I like that.
I think it's interesting if you think about it. In the airspace where everyone should be broadcasting a signal and displayed on the ADS-B in displays, it's too much to look at and they ignore it. Whereas when they're outside of that busier airspace and they can process the data, maybe where everyone isn't displaying it or broadcasting right. a signal, now they can use it. That's...
Yeah, so that's playing just right into what the previous feedback from Pop Charlie Lima is saying. He gets out of the required airspace mm-hmm. into the non-required airspace, and then there's a bunch of people that don't have it.
Right.
So, yeah.
We're not. I'm sorry we disappointed you by saying we don't. I think we need to clarify something if we haven't already. I think we've said it at least once, but it's worth mentioning one more time. Our airspace had very good radar coverage. We have very low terrain. We have a very good primary antenna and acceptable long-range antennas. Without ADS-B, we were getting adequate signals to work our airspace without many problems at all.
Yep.
If we did have issues, it was by the time we've already shipped you to advisories or to another facility. And in other words... ADS-B wasn't this big eye-opening, wow, look at all this traffic for us at Triad. That's not to say that there aren't facilities in the NAS that aren't seeing a much better product, if you will.
Right. The facility north of us.
Yes.
That's a good one. Had a huge sector of non-radar mm-hmm. below 6,000.
Mm-hmm.
And they're now seeing all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's a huge... That's a huge difference. So yeah.
Don't let our opinion of just it not being that big of a change make you feel like it was pointless to stuff it into your RV4, which I'm sure was difficult, but it was worth it. We're not trying to say it wasn't worth the install.
Right. Yep.
All right. Thank you, Hotel Bravo. Number 7, last timely feedback, and then we'll go into a little bit of an explanation, and we'll get some normal feedback today. From patron Echo Hotel, another audio. Where's the button?
Hey, AG and RH, patron Echo Hotel from Beantown here. Fantastic show. I just wanted to give you my 2 cents worth on ADS-B. I've had TISB and ADS-B traffic in my Archer for almost 4 years now. Yes, I was an early adopter, and I love it. I learned to fly in the paper maps and round gauges era, trained to look outside constantly, and I still do. However, I find ADS-B to be tremendously helpful sometimes. For example, when I return to my home airport, MIT Field, I can see how many folks are in the pattern and get a handle on people coming and going from the local practice area. If there are 10 people in the pattern, I expect the poor tower guy to be covered up and prepare for chaos. I always, always get flight following. I love talking to you guys. And I never try to second guess traffic calls to dodge fish finder targets, except on rare occasions. A couple of times I can remember doing so were when I was in center airspace and IFR traffic was called past me with only 500-foot vertical separation. And I was just a little uncomfortable with it. I let the controller know I was diverting a bit and there was no issue. I will admit to being a bit annoyed at spending upwards of $5,000 to equip and hearing that there's so far essentially no benefit to you guys. I would have thought that it would at least have improved the quality of data you see, but it sounds like not much has changed yet anyway. On another note, I'm planning to fly down to Metroplex in a couple weeks and hope to talk with one of you on the radio. Keep up the great work. All the best, Echo Hotel.
Thank you, Echo Hotel. We touched on it real quick. We may be getting a much better signal. We just don't know in our airspace. It was very good before. So,
yeah. Like we just said. So there are places in the NAS that benefited significantly from the increased picture that this provided. For us, the gains weren't as large, and typically, at least now, the areas of coverage that were increased didn't have a corresponding communications increase. So we can see these airplanes without any problem, but we can't talk to them. We still can't talk to them. So there were some benefit. There were some increases for us. It just wasn't as dramatic as other places. So again, don't let us, you know, disparage it and think that, it wasn't worthwhile for you to do, because there are places that are seeing great benefits.
I think we just said what I was going to say in this little mini explanation of ADS-B, but I think for the most part, it's worth skipping that next paragraph. Some mumbo jumbo. I will send a link. I will have a link in the show notes about ADS-B, the technical definitions, and all the fancy links from the FAA site as well. So check that out in the show notes if you want to learn more about it. But suffice it to say, the new equipment for us, like we said, we're not seeing that much of a change, but there are plenty of benefits that are being felt in other facilities. So,
yeah.
Anything else to say about that?
Well, and just all we've said this before, I think as this technology progresses and the common uses of it and the lessons learned that we're already starting to see, like reaching out to a plane that may or may not be on frequency, being able to see the call sign of an aircraft, I think those benefits will eventually find a use. If it's something like you talked about, or I think they use in the UK where you're flying through an area, it's required that you monitor the frequency. You don't have to call anybody, but you need to be on frequency in case they want to reach out to you. I can see areas like that, you know, becoming used here now that that technology is there that I can see. So if it's an area that you're required to have it, then there might be areas where you're required to monitor the frequency, and then the controller can reach out to you and know that you're there. So I think, you know, things like that might become more common. I don't know.
We are going to pick this up again in episode 111. We still have a lot of ADSB feedback in there, so stay tuned for part 4 next week. If you can stand talking about it for one more episode, AG, I can.
Yeah, I can, because the listeners are, they can, you know, they want to talk about it. It's definitely a hot topic right now. So yeah, I think we just keep going until people are sick of it.
All right. So until next week, we'll get to normal feedback.
Okay.
Feedback time.
Feedback.
From Patreon, Bravo Foxtrot. He sent us a YouTube link, which I have in the show notes. I made sure of that already. I don't know why they did this, but it's hilarious. A tower in Hawaii changed their ATIS. Instead of it being a letter, they changed it to a lump of coal. So everyone checked in with a lump of coal, and the controller responded, "Thank you for the lump of coal." It's pretty funny.
I did watch it. Yeah, it is pretty good. Yeah.
At the end, they change it from lump of coal to mistletoe. Anyway, thank you, Bravo Foxtrot. He said, "This reminds me of something you jokers would do at the triad. At the end, the ATIS changes from coal to mistletoe. Happy New Year. I hope you have a strong vision for year 2020. This has been sitting in the inbox for a while, and I'm sorry about that. But we're trying to play catch up with non-ADSB feedback at the same time. So we kind of have parallel shows going on right now.
Yeah, yeah.
But I appreciate the link. If you guys want to hear it, it's pretty funny. And it's all got closed captioning, so you can read along. But
yeah.
Cool. All right.
From patron Romeo November. "Hey guys, Romeo November here in Giant Swamp City with another question." this one about proper phraseology when asking ATC for forgiveness. The story. A couple weeks ago, I went with my CFII on a cross-country to a Class Delta airport. And in addition to the regular instrument instruction, he threw in some touch-and-goes. Apparently, he's reading the chapter in the instrument flying handbook called Make Your Student's Head Explode. That is chapter 5, I believe.
Subpart D. Yeah.
Right. Because when I was about to report my base turn, he told me to ask for flight following back home. Did I mention I was just turning base? you know that turn where you're putting in flaps, slowing down, but not too slow, that you stall maintaining your descent, talking to tower, judging your runway distance? Yeah, that turn. Well, the tower controller was apparently in on the plan, because his response was cleared to land 17, then on climb out, fly runway heading, contact approach on 119.8. I successfully repeated all this back on the radio, but apparently the runway heading part didn't stick, and at 1,000 MSL, while working the throttle prop mixture, made a right turn and contacted approach. Unlike the tower guy, the approach controller was not happy with my premature turn and reminded me twice that I was told to fly runway heading. So my question is, what is the proper way to say, oh, expletive, I made a mistake? That was perfect timing. Well done. The shame is burned into my soul, and I'll never, ever do it again. What is the proper way to say that on frequency? And should I have immediately turned back to runway heading, or perhaps just ask for instructions? Thanks. Keep up the amazing podcast, Romeo November.
That's a good one.
Well, yeah, I would say if it was me, I would probably say something to the effect of, oh, sorry about that. We're turning back to runway heading now. Mm-hmm. And then that gives the controller the opportunity to say, no. You've messed it up enough. Let's go with course of action Bravo and fly this heading. So, you know, but at least that gives the controller the time or the space to say, let's do this instead.
I agree with that. It drives me bananas to hear another controller tell someone what they should have done and wasting time revisiting the past when they can just issue a new instruction and, you know, deal with what you, the problem that was caused and fix it with a new instruction instead of going back, you're told to do this. Well, that's great. They know that. That is true, but it's pointless to mention that anymore. Let's just move on.
Yeah.
I have to separate you from whoever is causing this problem. Fly this heading, maintain this altitude, and be done with it. Stop revisiting the error. I cannot stand when people do that. It drives me nuts.
Yeah.
So for you as the pilot, yes, admit it. I turned. I'm on this heading. If they haven't already told you, say, what would you like us to do? You know, you're at their mercy at that point.
Right.
Sorry, I got on my soapbox.
No, it's fine. That kind of stuff happens more often than you probably think.
Yes.
Typically, we have a little bit of, you know, leeway in that we're not running planes right into the departure area.
Mm-hmm.
Or anywhere near the tower's airspace, really. So if you're in a slower aircraft making a turn, you're not going to get very far very fast for it to be that big of a factor. Unless you did 180 turn and just flew back up the final, you know, it's going to be base, at least for us, it's sort of a no harm, no foul kind of thing. And your correction back to runway heading, if you looked at it on the radar, would almost seem insignificant.
I'm trying to read in his feedback if he says how far he turned. He's 17, landing 17, so let's just assume the 170 is what he thought. Yeah, he said, should I go back to that? I don't think he said what turn he made. No, they didn't. So maybe a good rule of thumb, it's unlikely, I'm going to say something that I might regret, but I'm going to say it anyway. It is unlikely that you're going to get more than a 90-degree turn in out of an airport that you were just controlled into by the tower.
Yeah, I think that's a good generalization.
So if you are turning back into the final, and we've talked about this several times, that would probably cause a little bit of a scare downstairs in the radar room, and they can either revisit the past and bug you about what you should have done and wasting time, or they can issue an instruction that will prevent you from making the problem worse, which right. I think is a better use of their time.
Right. So,
and you were probably VFR. It sounds like you were if you were doing touch and goes. Or you.
Oh, no, that was part of his instrument instruction.
Right, so but that doesn't mean they were.
So they got an IFR back to their destination.
Yeah. Well, he said flight following back to his place. Right?
He did. But then the controller supposedly said clear to.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, I made the assumption there that you were VFR, but either way, even if you were IFR, yes, there may have been a loss of separation, but that doesn't mean that they can't fix it pretty quick.
Right.
Sorry. I got stuck on that one.
Oh, it's okay.
Admit your mistake, ask for instructions, and move on.
Yep.
If they want to give you the brasher warning, they may, and you may have to talk to them, but hopefully that gets resolved over the phone, and you admit your mistake, and you move on. And your instructor's, you know, sort of involved in this, too. He shouldn't have let you turn.
Right.
I do want to mention that.
It's ultimately going to come down on him, really.
Right.
It's not going to be the student.
But they saw you turn. I mean, they're sitting there watching you make the control input, so.
Right.
All right. Sorry.
No.
Number three from, I got fancy music for this one. I think he's the one who asked for this, too. I can hit the right button. Mm. Are you laughing at me?
No.
From PayPal supporter Charlie Kilo. Gentlemen, although you portray the mystical Triad Airport and airspace as a relatively small part of the NAS, it is clear that you underestimate your importance and influence. If one is able to decipher the identification of the highly obfuscated Sea Captain Nick, I think I pronounced that properly, and I won't try it again. Check its location on IFR en route low altitude chart. You will see that above the name of the airport is a designation, Mike Oscar November, in capital letters. Could this be a reminder to pilots that it's every Monday that a new release of opposing bases comes out? If so, this kind of goes against the claim that no government resources are used in the creation or promotion of the show, in keeping with the theme of, I can't say it twice, I'm not doing it, obfuscation. I did not find any reference to this on the chart legend page. However, in order to relieve your overworked and underpaid, we don't pay them, research department, they're interns, and they are held accountable regardless. I did some additional checking, Charlie Kilo says. It appears that your airport has been designated Mike Oscar November Airport and is only one of two in your state, geographical state, not the state of mind. I also discovered that apparently there is no reference to any of this in the latest controller's handbook, so this may be all new to you. It is, to me at least. Did you know this?
No.
Apparently, he says, the intent of the MON process is to have flight options should there be a complete loss of GPS coverage. Here's a brief summary of the information from the AIM, Minimum Operational Network, which is what MON stands for. The VOR MON will ensure that regardless of an aircraft's position in the contiguous United States, CONUS, a MON airport equipped with legacy ILS or VOR approaches will be within 100 nautical miles. These airports are referred to as MON airports and have an ILS approach or a VOR approach if an ILS is not available. The intent of the MON airport is to provide an approach that can be used by aircraft without ADF or DME when radar may not be available. So obviously Triad Airport is very important, part of the NAS, and we should all respect and be impressed by you even more for that reason. Thanks, Charlie Kilo. Well, thank you for pointing that out.
I do see it now. I've never seen that. The research department just sent me a shot of the en route low chart.
Oh, very nice.
It does, right at the top, MON in green background and white letters.
It is a coincidence that our show is produced on Mondays, but very cool coincidence.
Yeah.
Thank you, Charlie Kilo. Your turn now. I'm going to play some music, then you got to say something.
Okay. Something. The question of the week.
Well timed, high volume. I like it.
Cue giggling. So we got a suggestion from Mike from Flying in Life podcast for question of the week. For a question of the
That was my fault. Week.
How has ADS-B enhanced your flying? So I think some people responded to this before the question even came out.
We have a handful or more. We have two handfuls worth of feedback still in there. Okay. But if you're just joining the conversation, tell us something positive, please. I think we've steered the ship back towards positive.
Do you agree?
I do, too. Okay.
Yep.
We made a couple of comments. At this topic, for some reason, and it's probably because of the input, having to put it in airplanes, very expensive equipment, and the desire for them to see the input or the display on their aircraft, there's maybe a tendency to pay attention to every single syllable that you and I are saying about it. And our words are kind of getting picked apart, which is fine. I think we're being careful, and I hope we've steered it back towards positive. We love ADS-B.
We do.
This message is brought to you by ADS-B.
We love it.
We have it for breakfast every day.
Get yours today. Excuse me. So we have a link in the show notes to the four-part series Mission Triad.
Mm-hmm.
produced by patron Juliet Bravo and co-starring patron Charlie Papa, who were featured on episode 74.
Yes.
Man, I nailed it.
You did nail that.
Enjoy the awesome videos. So go check them out. They are really good. Really well done. And
yeah,
not without humor. So,
with one exception, I sent him an email telling him it was going to sit there for a little bit until we got done with ADSB. It was Juliet Echo Charlie with another fantastic show topic, audio, high quality audio, by the way. With that one exception, we have feedback prior to January 16th, 2020 read. If we did not get to yours, it didn't respond to it, and it got lost somehow, please let us know. AG, I will see you at work later today.
All right.
You're a three or five? You're a three. I'm a five. Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
All right.
You can have it.
Hmm?
You can have the five.
I got it.
I don't care for it.
It's 9:41 a.m. Eastern Time. Let's see when I can get this thing out into the interweb, the galactic aviation universe.
All right.
The clock starts now. Closing out episode 110 of Opposing Bases, Air Traffic Talk, Romeo Hotel.
And Alpha Golf. Goodbye, everyone.
Drop.
Visit our website at opposingbases.com, where you can leave audio or written feedback. Find us on Twitter at Opposing Bases. Or send feedback directly to our inbox at feedback@opposingbases.com. The views and opinions expressed on Opposing Bases Air Traffic Talk are for entertainment purposes only and do not represent the views, opinions, or official positions of the Federal Aviation Administration, Department of Transportation, or the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. All show recordings are done on personal time and personal property. Actual air traffic recordings are from third-party sources, and no government resources are used in the production of the show. There is no nexus between Opposing Bases and the FAA or NACA. All episodes are the property of Opposing Bases and shall not be recorded or transcribed without express written consent. For official guidance on laws, rules, and regulations referred to on this show, please refer to your local flight standards district office or a certified flight instructor.
True.
Opposing Bases offers this product to promote aviation safety and enhance the knowledge of its listeners, but makes no guarantees to listeners regarding accuracy or legal applications.